Hare Krishna. So it's very wonderful to be here. Satchidananda Maharaj is here and many other senior Vaishnavas. It's always difficult to speak actually in Pandavasena gatherings because here I see so many devotees who actually cultivated me, who contributed so much to my spiritual development, so I'm made of the mercy of all the Vaishnavas I'm in front of. So it's always a very difficult task to speak, but I'll try my best with your permission. And Maharaj is always, it's never daunting speaking in front of Maharaj actually. It's actually very empowering because Maharaj is so kind. So with your permission, Maharaj, we're going to share something on the sensitive topic. So what happened is a couple of weeks ago, Krishna Avatar Prabhu texted me. I don't know if someone else dropped out. Maybe Suchi Rani was supposed to do this session. Or I don't know. So I'm like the plan B, the stand-in. So then Krishna Avatar texted me and he said, okay, look, it's great you're coming. You know, you are always our first choice. Okay. I believe you. And then he said, okay, we need a topic. We need a topic. You know, the theme is community building. So then I just sent him a one-line message back. I said, the topic is, in quotation marks, I'll speak about the sensitive topic. So he replied back like a, he's like, amazing, that sounds like an amazing topic. Never even asked me what I was going to speak about. It's nice to know there's love and trust in the community of Vaishnavas. But maybe you should be scared because straight after this class I'm going to leave. Just maybe a bit scared. But I did want to speak about the sensitive topic. And what I want you to do just for one moment is turn to the person next to you, and when you see this in front of you, the sensitive topic, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Just tell the person next to you. So, the sensitive topic, don't hold back, this is like we're all friends here. When you hear the sensitive topic, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Anyone?
Mental health, problems with devotees.
Mental health, problems with devotees. Okay.
When you look around the room, there's mostly only Asian origin people.
Suggesting I do an evening on the Hinduization of ISKCON. Jagannath Sharan is saying there's only mainly Indians in the room. Gujarati dancers. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear the sentence? Oh, don't be shy, whatever. Because you have the wrong answer.
Three lessons.
You should keep and unpack it.
The three lessons of Grihastha success.
I'm a brahmachari, you'll have to come and give that class. I don't think I was speaking about that. Ladies.
Conflict.
Conflict.
Fences taken.
Offenses, apparat. Oh, this is really good. No one in the room is like political, no one like surfs the net looking at different controversial things. None the gold part, come on. I know you want to say something, none the gold part. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think about the most sensitive topic? Come on, I know your son's next to you, but it's all right.
Politically,
just whatever, when it comes to your mind.
It could be devotional clothing in Christian consciousness.
Okay, Okay, devotion is burning. Good.
Anyone else? Something burning that you feel is a really sensitive issue in the community of devotees?
So is that gender?
Gender division.
Female Diksha Guru? Let's just get real here. We've got to be real. Okay, one last one. Yes, you're running.
Trust.
Yes, these are very sensitive issues.
So many of these issues, including the three lessons of Grihastha life, the devotional clothing and all of these will be topics for the late night Q&A. I'll be in London by that time. But today we will discuss a topic which I think is very sensitive, but very crucial to community development. From my own, whatever little experience I have, and for whatever observations I've had of the community of devotees in ISKCON. Before I tell you what I think the sensitive topic is, the theme for this weekend is community. Whenever devotees ask me to speak on community or relationships, which is such a popular topic in ISKCON nowadays, I feel a little hesitant, because I think I joined the movement actually not looking for community. I joined the movement actually not looking for relationships. When I wanted to join the Brahmachari ashram, there was one Brahmachari in the ashram, and he was kind of checking out my seriousness in becoming a renunciate. So one day he pulled me to the side and he said, I think he was trying to scare me. He said, renunciation means to become socially dead. I was like, sign me up, man. That sounds so exciting. That, you know? So I know Maharaj was talking about strange people in isolation, so I'm not really connected to that. I feel like I was that kind of person. I came to this movement, I joined as a brahmachari, I was actually not looking for relationships. It gets even heavier than this. Once I was reading a book, I was like developing my samskaras of renunciation and I read this one book. It wasn't a Krishna conscious book, it was just about monasticism. And the author, he wrote, if a renunciate dies and nobody knows and nobody cries, his life is a success. And I was like, wow. So you can see I was a little bit of a different type of personality. When I came to ISKCON and I joined as a monk, I found that people began talking about relationships more and more and more. It was very strange for me because I thought, you know, spiritual life was something different. As time went by, I realized how important relationships are. To this day, it's a challenge for me to actually come out and have warm, deep, open-hearted relationships, because I have definitely something from a previous life, a heavy dose of impersonalism, which actually makes it difficult for me. But as time has gone by, I've seen that the process, I was speaking with Rasa Bihari this morning, and he was making the point that as we go on in spiritual life, the heart becomes softer. And as the heart becomes softer, our ability to have relationships grows. And as time went by, I realized how important relationships are. In my life, I realized that probably I can survive even if I don't have relationships. I could probably get by. But what occurred to me strongly is that although I may be able to survive without relationships, if I want to thrive in my life, if I want to be the best I can, if I want to bring out the true ability that Krishna has bestowed upon me, then it can only be done through the loving association and relationships with devotees. So someone may say, I'm not a touchy-feely type of person, I don't need like relationships like everyone else. But even that person, if they have someone in their life who is genuinely wishing them well, who is genuinely concerned about them, who is genuinely thinking about their well-being, then that person will be able to go to another level of achievement in their life just by relationships with other Vaishnavas. So it really is relationships are such a key aspect of spiritual life. One sannyasi, he was coming through the manor and he said, basically, I see two types of devotees. Happy devotees and miserable devotees. And the main difference between them, that is the defining factor, is friendly relationships with other people. That makes you happy, not miserable. Friendly relationships. So it's so much a part of our life. We are, as they say in the English language, social animals. So we require so much to have relationships. And as time has gone by, I've really appreciated that. So today I want to speak about a sensitive topic that I think will actually help us to engender much better relationships between the devotees. And a much warmer community, Hanivasena and ISKCON in general. We are all on a journey in spiritual life. We're going from selfishness to selflessness. This is the most basic journey that every devotee goes through. Chaitanya Charitamrita explains, Atmendriya Priti Vancha Dare Boli Kam, Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dhare Prema Nam. That when one is simply acting for themselves, they live in a me-centered world. They're simply cultivating their own selfish desires and thinking about every decision that they make from their own point of view. Then this life is basically a selfish life. Aham mameti, as they quoted in the poem this morning. I, me, and mine. And basically the whole process of spiritual life is to go from selfishness to selflessness. If in our life we develop more and more selflessness, then we can understand that true Krishna consciousness is awakening. Once Krishna and Balaram, just after the pastime of stealing the clothes of the gopis, Krishna, Balaram and the cowherd boys went into the forest and they sat underneath the tree. And then as Krishna saw the tree, he recited a beautiful verse, Aho esham varam janma sarva prani upajivinam sujanasyevaye samvai vimukhayanti narthina. Krishna looked at the tree and he said, Aho esham varam janma. What a wonderful existence this tree has. I don't know the last time you looked at a tree and thought, Aho esham varam janma. We don't generally look at trees and think like that. Krishna looked at the tree and says, Varam janma. What a birth. Sarva prani upajivinam, because every single iota of this tree's existence is simply to serve others. Vimukha yanti narthina, no one goes away from a tree disappointed. A tree will always give, no matter how you treat it, will always give. And therefore Krishna says, this is a beautiful, successful, wonderful birth. A birth which is based upon complete selflessness. I always remember there was one devotee in the ashram. His name was Bhakti Leo. He was from Israel. And he used to have a locker next to me. And he had a quote on his locker, so I used to see it every day, and it was a quote from Tamal Krishna Maharaj's diary, and it was Srila Prabhupada quoting. And Srila Prabhupada said in his final days, and this was the quote on his locker, I have no other motivation. I am simply planning how people can become happy.
So every day I used to see that quote and I thought, this is real life. When one lives in such a state of complete selflessness, this is perfection. So real relationships and real community can only manifest when there is a deep selflessness within the individual. If you want to know how deep your relationship with your spiritual master is, if you want to know how deep your relationship with Krishna is, if you want to know how deep, dare I say it, your relationship with your spouse is, just ask yourself how much selflessness is there in that relationship, and then you'll understand how deep it is. And if you want to know how deep a community is, a community of individuals who come together, then ask yourself how selfless are they towards each other. So selflessness really is the defining factor that we're moving towards if we really want to have deep relationships and deep community. Now put your hand up if you think selflessness in your life is very far away. And who thinks it's close?
One cannot say that selfless, I think one will not say.
You will never say?
Yeah.
Yes, of course, Maharaj is making a very wonderful point that no one will never say. But if we closely examine our hearts, then we will see. Of course, I can only speak for myself, but from the general conversations that we have amongst Vaishnavas, we can say that still selflessness seems like a very lofty ideal. And sometimes what happens in Krishna consciousness is that our ideals are so high that we sometimes become discouraged. We think like, I'll never be selfless. I'll never be like Srila Prabhupada. You know, I will never be able to make such a statement. And therefore, one important principle in spiritual life is we always are conscious of the real, we're conscious of the ideal, but we always look for something achievable. Now please try to remember this in any aspect of your spiritual life. Be aware of the real. Be inspired by the ideal. And always search for something achievable. Because if we're simply focused on the real, our spiritual life will stagnate. We'll think, I am who I am, and this is what I'm doing, and it's never going to change, and let's just learn to live with it. And if we're always thinking about the ideal, it may just sometimes seem so far away that we think, you know what, I can't even, I'll never get there, what's the point of even trying? So we must be aware of the reality of our situation, inspired by the ideal, and search out something achievable. And on this journey from selfishness to selflessness, which sometimes may seem a very long journey, what I'm suggesting today that we think about very, very deeply is sensitivity. And that's the sensitive topic. Who's got it now? Vishnu got it, right? Sorry for the anticlimax. The sensitive topic is that if we really want to have relationships, if we really want to have community, then we have to become sensitive. And sensitive means we begin to actually think about how others are being affected by our activities. This is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly important. Everything we say, everything we do, every decision that we make has an effect on someone else. And only when we are very conscious about our speech, our activities, our decisions, and how they're affecting other people, can we begin to enter into a deeper relationship and a deeper community. And shall I tell you one other amazing thing and scary thing? Everything you don't say, everything you don't do, and every decision you don't make also affects people. You are more powerful. powerful than you can imagine in what effect you have on other people. Because you may not remember it, but people remember it. Sometimes we cover up our insensitivity with different excuses. Oh no, we got a mission to do. Therefore, sometimes, okay, we may have to burn some people out. We say, it's okay to be insensitive because we got a mission to do. But do you know what? When Krishna and Balaram had a mission for their spiritual master, Sandipani Muni, Samit Bani Stotram, when he told them, go and fetch firewood, that was their mission, Krishna and Balaram's mission. They went out, it began raining, they got the firewood. And it's explained, in one hand they were holding the firewood, and in the other hand they were holding each other. The acharyas commentate that this is spiritual life, that we hold the mission in one hand, but in the other hand we hold great love and support and unity with the other devotees, sensitivity towards the others. Sometimes we cover up our insensitivity saying, anyway, you have to sometimes be honest, you have to tell people how it is. But Krishna says in the Gita, even when you're speaking, satyam, priyam, hitam, there's also a way in which to communicate and help people, give them a message you need to give them in a way that's sensitive and digestible. It's not just the, basically in this verse, what Krishna is saying is it's not just the message, but it's the manner and it's the mood with which you give it. So there's no excuse, even if you say, no, we need to be honest in the movement, there's a way to be honest and sensitive at the same time. Sometimes we cover up our insensitivity by saying, oh, that person's too sensitive. They get affected by every little thing. What can I do? But still, yes, people may be sensitive, but we have to try to, as much as possible, help them to work around that by helping to understand whatever anattas they may have and to lift them up. So there's so many ways in which we try to justify insensitivity, but actually it's one of the most dangerous things to our spiritual life, and it will not help to build a stronger community. Here is a very famous pastime from the Bhagavatam. In the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, we read of Gajendra, who is playfully enjoying in the waters of the Trikuta mountain, and who is bitten by a crocodile, after which he offers great prayers and Vishnu comes and saves him from that great predicament. After the whole incident, the Bhagavatam tells of the previous life of Gajendra. The crocodile in his previous life was a king called Huhu. And this king, while bathing in some waters, he pulled the leg of Devala Rishi, and Devala Rishi cursed that king to become a crocodile in his next life. And Gajendra, he was also cursed. Because Gajendra in his previous life was a king called Indradyumna. Indradyumna had completed all his kingly duties, he had done his duties as a Rajarishi, and then he had renounced life and gone to the forest. And in the forest he was in a deep meditation on the Supreme Lord. And while he was in meditation on the Supreme Lord, the great sage Agastya Rishi came. And because he was in such a trance of spiritual absorption, Indradyumna was not sensitive to the fact that Agastya Rishi had arrived, and therefore he didn't welcome him. Agastya Rishi was incensed by his lack of sensitivity. And Agastya Rishi cursed him, because you've been so insensitive, in your next life you will receive the body of an elephant which is dull and insensitive. And that's indeed what happened. Sometimes we walk around in this movement a little bit like elephants. We're not sensitive, we're not aware, we walk and we don't know how many people are being affected by our actions. Even in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, the elephant is again mentioned in the context of Vaishnava Parada. Yadi Vaishnava Parada Ute Hati Mata Upadeva Chinda Yaya Sukhi Yaya Pata. Chaitanya Charitamrita says that if one wants to know a sure way to destroy their spiritual life, then the quickest way to do it is to commit the mad elephant offense of being insensitive and offensive towards other devotees. If we go further on in the Bhagavatam, then we find a conversation in the beginning of the 11th canto between King Nimi and the Navayogendras. And King Nimi asks an amazing range of questions, and each of the Navayogendras begin to give answers on different aspects of spiritual life. And when they begin asking about different types of devotees, then what Havir, one of the Yogendras, does is he begins to delineate who is a Kanista, who is a Madhyam, and who is a Uttam. And when he wants to describe who is a Kanista, who is the most materialistic, the lowest neophyte type of devotee, then these are the words that Havir uses to describe who a Kanista is. Archayam eva hariye pujam ya shadaye hate natat bhakteshu janyeshu sa bhakta prakrita smrita. A devotee who faithfully engages in the worship of the deity in the temple but does not behave properly toward other devotees or people in general is called a prakrita bhakta or a materialistic devotee and is considered in the lowest position. If you look at this verse, it actually has deep implications for our life. What this verse is basically saying is that you could be thinking of Krishna. You could be thinking of devotional service. You could even be thinking about your own spiritual advancement. But if you're not simultaneously thinking of devotees, then basically you're a materialist. It's like, if you look at your life, you think, I'm thinking of Krishna, I'm thinking of service, I'm thinking of spiritual advancement. Hey, I'm doing pretty well. But what this verse is saying is you could be thinking of all of those things, but if simultaneously you're not thinking of the Vaishnavas, you're not concerned about the Vaishnavas, you're not sensitive towards the Vaishnavas, and you're not deeply contemplating how others are being affected by your activities, then basically you're prakrita bhakta. If you take sensitivity out of someone's life, then you're basically left with material consciousness. And what does he say in the next verse? Ishvare tadadhimeshu balisheshu visatsuja prema maitri kripopeksha yakaloti samadhyama. Who's a Madhyam? Actually, Maharaj explained this morning when he told us to draw the circle and split it into four. One who knows how to deal with Krishna, deal with the devotees, deal with the innocent, and deal with the envious. Such a person who has sensitivity, who's actually thinking about the others around them and where they're at, and then appropriately dealing with them, such a person is a Madhyam. So therefore, Prabhupada said, the whole purpose of ISKCON is to make a society of Madhyam devotees. But Madhyam devotees can only come if we have sensitivity. So, the reason I'm raising this is because I've seen in my life how insensitive I've been to others. Again, Rasa Bihari and myself, we were speaking this morning, and he was also mentioning the same point. He said, I came into ISKCON as an Essex boy. I don't know much about Essex boys. But he said, I was rough on the edges. I was a bit harsh. And as years went by, I realized actually how to deal with devotees properly. So the reason I'm raising this is because if we really want community, if we really want relationships, then we have to be sensitive towards others. Because insensitivity can kill someone's spiritual life before they've even begun. And let me tell you the other side of the story. A loving sensitivity towards someone can save their spiritual life before problems even come. Whatever people experience, they say, people may or may not remember what you said, but they'll definitely remember how you made them feel. For a few moments, and then we'll get a bit more of a sense of maybe the sensitivity and insensitivity that we're dealing with, yes, and then think about how it applies and how we can improve. Is that okay? So I'll give you some moments to do that. Occur within our communities, because maybe in hearing each one of these incidents, we can first and foremost reflect whether any of those things may relate to the way in which we conduct ourselves. And so number two, also, so that when we see such things happening, then we can ensure that they don't happen and try to create some positive change. So would someone like to share anything? Okay, I have a mic for you, so please just hang on 1 second. But you don't want to say no because I'm the mic.
I think like when you're doing a service and someone gets stressed on the team and they don't maybe manage stress nicely, and they're like the nicest person normally, and only one comment or maybe they're really frustrated or something, and like take it out of you, or it's completely like misdirected and it's so cutting and so disheartening, and that feels like so insensitive. Maybe you're trying your best, or you're trying to do as much as you can, and it might not be exactly what they need, but because they unintentionally are so stressed and worried, they take it out on you. And I think that's like, yeah, an example which maybe a lot of people can relate to, because all of us do so much service, which is often very stressful.
Yes, this is a chronic problem. In ISKCON, one devotee told me, you'll never find shortage of two things, prasadam and service. So no one can ever complain in this movement, there's not enough service to do. There's so much to do. And sometimes that service creates such pressure, such demand, such anxiety upon someone that they begin to conduct themselves in sometimes very insensitive ways. So we have to be very careful when we're under pressure. Because everyone in this room is taking some level of responsibility. When we're under pressure, we cannot afford for it to lead to insensitivity. Because that's sometimes something we hide behind. Oh yeah, well, you're saying I'm insensitive, but you don't understand how much pressure I'm under. I'm trying to get so many things done here. But the thing is, if you're insensitive and you offend a devotee, then you'll lose your enthusiasm, you lose your focus, you lose your desire, you lose your determination, and you'll use every asset that you have to actually do that service anyway. So even if you're under pressure, you must never allow it to lead to an insensitivity that will discourage someone else. Thank you. Someone else?
This point might seem really like simple, this example of something I heard happen, but because we're in such a big community, I think it will be relevant. So it's just there was a person, there were a group of people, and there was like a group of friends, and they were all saying hello to each other, giving each other a hug, acknowledging everyone except this one person. It was heartbreaking to hear, because they were just standing there, and they were just not acknowledged at all, and they felt that so much so, you know, they felt like they didn't want to be their own devotees.
Sometimes it's the smallest thing that someone is not acknowledged in a group that makes them feel like, I don't want to be part of this. One thing I found fascinating is how when we do outreach, we're so sensitive sometimes to people. When we do outreach, we're like thinking like, oh, and then any little feedback they give, we're like, okay, yeah, we better change our whole game, you know, like we don't want anyone to feel like that, you know. But then once someone becomes a devotee, it's like, anyway, yes. It's fascinating. It's fascinating how sometimes even I remember once Balabhadra Prabhu, who used to be Puri Maharaj, he gave a Sankirtan class. And he was saying, you meet someone on the street and they give you £20 for a Bhagavad Gita. And as that person's walking away, you think, I've met such a nice person. And then down the road, your Sankirtan partner, who you had a little argument with this morning, you're looking at him and thinking, that guy's an idiot. That guy's on the street every day, giving himself. But just sometimes we're so harsh with our own people, or sometimes so insensitive with our own people, but so sensitive to the people out there. It's quite an enigma of how we act. So yes, yeah, sometimes those small things, thank you for sharing that, that's really, really important. It really makes a difference. There was someone here that wanted to say something.
The service lead, he was quite stressed out because he was also going through something. And just out of his room, like, to me, in my mind, the way I would say to myself to pick myself up, I just said to him, it was very insensitive, I just said, don't forget about it, just pick yourself up, why be like that? And then they said this to me, but I appreciate them saying to me, I'm going to punch you in the face. But made me check myself, like, instantly. I was so selfish to think the way I speak to myself, everyone else is like me. Take you on just about it.
Sometimes our sensitivity comes because we project our abilities. Our way of practicing spiritual life, we expect everyone, Atmavan, Manyate, Jagat, we think everyone should, if I can handle it, why can't he handle it? So sometimes we look at people and you think, do you know how much I got on my plate? And look how much you got on your plate. But what we don't see is that everyone has a different size plate. Everyone has a different capacity. Everyone's a different person. So we can never project thinking that, you know, just because I can do it. It's very... I tell you, just coming on from that. Somehow in my life, Krishna blessed me with good health. Now I'm going to touch wood. I'm going to say that. I'm going to get some health problem. But somehow or other, I got good health. So far, so good. So I had this ability in the ashram, no matter what time I went to sleep, I could wake up. And at a certain point I realized I was projecting that on other people and expecting other people to be able to do the same. And then I realized that sometimes Krishna gives you a strength and it can be your greatest asset in spiritual life, and it can also be the greatest cause of your downfall. I had good health, I had the ability to stretch, to kind of physically do more. If I used it properly, I could actually do more service and make huge amounts of spiritual advancement. But that same strength, if I used it to judge other people, to become proud about it and think I'm doing better than someone else because I have this, then that same strength can be the cause of your downfall. So we have to be very careful not to project on others. and to realize everyone is functioning within their own ability. Yeah, Manikopa.
So one example that I see a lot of devotees getting upset with is the medium of WhatsApp. And so I raise that because I think it's something that we're all using more and more. And when we are speaking to people face-to-face, you might be more sensitive because they're in front of you. So I'm thinking about WhatsApp, I'm thinking about social media, I'm thinking about comments on Facebook, Instagram, all the rest of it. And because we don't see them, we might send something, or in the moment, you're on, you know, on the way to work, on a bus, on a train, whatever. But those words still land and still have a massive impact. So obviously I'm speaking about myself when I've sent messages and people have been offended. But generally with devotees, I've seen many people get hurt. And it's because, and it goes on to that point around jokes as well and banter. And we talk about this a lot, even in corporate circles. And, you know, where is the line? You know, we don't want to have the banter police. But at the same time, we're here to make spiritual advancement. And it's the type of joke, isn't it? And normally that joke has a seed of truth in it, which can hurt. Yeah.
But just returning to your original point about social media again, it's like you have to be extremely careful. It's funny, the other day, every morning we read Shikshamrita in the morning program, and Prabhupada wrote in one letter, obviously this has to be understood in context as well, but it's just relevant to the point. He said, you can say any damn thing, but don't put it in writing. So anyway, it has to be taken in context. But the point is, be very careful what you put in writing, because it stays. You may change your mind about certain views, more information may come to light along with what you've put in writing. People don't even see the whole context of your emotion behind it. There's so much room for misunderstanding. They say if you want to get into an argument, it's easy. Just put a comment on Facebook and wait. It's going to kick off. So I don't know how much we solve through such mediums, and so much of bad feeling is created. So yeah, we must be very careful on such forums. We actually have a live drama of insensitivity. Would you like to see it?
Yeah.
That was really insensitive.
So you can. So you can give a round of applause.
Welcome to our drama. We've got a new member to our cast this year. His name is Gopinath. He's not like the rest of us. He's American. Okay, scene one.
Yeah, so much. Thank you so much for asking. It's just so kind.
Devotees there?
I don't know.
Scene two, Vajranath Prabhu is just coming back from the hospital after an operation.
Prabhu, you haven't been at your service for like a day. What's going on? Is everything okay?
I've just been discharged from Norfolk Park.
Raju told you service is transcendental. Just transcend it. It's all good. Just get it done.
I couldn't clean the pots. I had an operation on my bladder.
Are you telling us there's something like health problems?
Well, it was an operation.
Are you sure you'll be able to still be stronger?
Listen, if you can't serve, can you at least become a patron?
Final scene. All please rise for the Brahmachari Council.
Rajananda Das Brahmachari, Rajananda Man. Gopinath Das Brahmachari, USA. Amisha Joshi Brahmachari, Brooklyn Temple. Shyam Gopal Brahmachari, Victoria Hall. So, Brahmachari number 3, welcome to your annual review. Did any of the other council members like to say how good their Brahmachari year was?
I've had an amazing year. My sadhana's been good, and I think I've been,
it's actually going really well.
Yeah, I distributed more books than I've ever done before, the best year ever.
I've been waking up every day, no matter what time I go to sleep, it's been incredible. You've been preaching at the base, and the base has grown from 3 to 4 devotees. Would any of the panelists like to begin the review?
So, Brahmachari 3, how are you?
Good, thank you, Brahmachari.
Good. Now, tell us about your Brahmachari.
It's been going well, but I've kind of, this year, I've come to the realization that. I'm going to leave the ashram.
What?
Should we give you a mattress?
I'm not going to keep.
We gave you original source shampoo.
Is he still talking about leaving?
I think so.
Another one bites the dust.
Finishing up in 20 minutes, right?
6:30.
With your permission, what I'd like to do is share two things with you, and then maybe we can open it up. Maybe Sadhana Sachinanda Maharaj, if you have any. Think you'd like to share on this topic with us, and then maybe we can have some question and answers. Okay. So I just want to share two things that I think are very important in relation to sensitivity. And the first thing is, let me tell you a story. It's a story from the ancient, it's an Oriental tradition. And in this story, there's a king, and the king wants to train up the next prince. His prince, he wants to train him up to be the next king. So he says, before you can become the ruler, my dear son, what I want you to do is go to the forest. I want you to go to the forest for 1 year, and then come back and report back to me everything you've heard in the forest. So the prince goes to the forest, the Minli forest, and for 1 year patiently listens, sitting in meditation with ears open, trying to decipher all the different sounds in that beautiful environment. And then after a year he comes back, and the king looks at the prince and says, okay, what did you hear? So the prince said, I heard the sound of the wind blowing. I heard the sound of leaves rustling. I heard the sound of the cuckoo singing. I heard the sound of the wolves howling. The king looked at him and said, did you hear anything else? He said, no. The king said, are you sure you didn't hear anything else? He said, no. The king said, I want you to go back for 1 more year and listen more closely. So the prince went back, baffled. What more? I was hearing everything. There was nothing more to hear. So he sat down in the first month, second month, he was hearing the wind blowing, the leaves rustling, the cuckoos humming. He couldn't hear anything else. He was wondering, what more am I supposed to be hearing here? As he was praying, trying to understand what the king was trying to teach him, he began to hear other things. He began to hear many other things. And his heart became enlivened and he realized, this is what the king wanted me to hear. So after a year, he went back and the king said to him, so what did you hear? He said, I heard the leaves rustling, the wind blowing, the cuckoo singing, the wolves howling. The king looked at him and said, what more did you hear? Did you hear something more? And the prince said, I listened very, very hard. And I began to hear more. The king said, tell me, what more did you hear? The prince said, as I listened closely, as I listened beyond the externals, as I listened deeper, I began to hear the sound of the sun warming the earth. I began to hear the sound of the flowers opening. I began to hear the sound of the grass drinking the morning dew. And the king smiled and he said, now you're ready to be a leader because you've learned the art of hearing the unheard. This is such a powerful point. Whenever we're dealing with someone, we have to try and hear the unheard, the emotions they don't tell you about, the history that you never heard, their dissatisfaction which they never communicated. Because when you have the hidden story, understanding what is impelling someone to act in the way they're acting, then you can relate to them in an appropriate way. If someone is seeking attention, there's a good chance that the hidden story is that in their life they never received appreciation. If someone is seeking domination, there's a very good chance that the hidden story is that in their life they never received protection. If we try to see what's behind something, what's causing someone to act the way they act, and if we begin to hear the unheard sensitively, then we'll actually be able to relate to people and have much warmer communities where people actually feel understood. So that's the first principle I wanted to share with you, which maybe you can meditate on. And the final thing before we open up that I want to share with you is one of my favorite pictures of Srila Prabhupada. This picture, I could just see it again and again. Because every single picture of Srila Prabhupada contains such a deep story behind it. And this picture for me is something that I aspire towards every day. This is a picture of Srila Prabhupada in 1965 in Butler, Pennsylvania. Prabhupada arrived in America. He arrived in New York at the Port Authority bus terminal. There was a traveler's aid representative ready to take him to Butler, Pennsylvania. Prabhupada arrived there completely alien to the culture of America. Before Prabhupada had arrived, he had sent a letter to Gopal and Sally Agarwal, who were his sponsors. And he said, I'm coming. And the day that Sally opened the letter, understanding the Swami was coming, she was flabbergasted, like a Swami in Butler, Pennsylvania. Like, she called her husband, Gopal, and she said, the Swami is actually coming. The other scary thing is that Prabhupada had sent a picture of himself. because they may not recognize, like, so Prabhupada sent a picture of himself, and you know which picture he sent? I don't know if you've ever seen that picture. It's Prabhupada's passport photo. And have you seen that photo? Prabhupada looks dead serious. Of course, one devotee said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, you look very serious in that picture." Prabhupada said, this picture was taken at the most ecstatic moment of my life." Prabhupada said, "This was my passport picture. I was fulfilling the order of my spiritual master to go to the West." But on the picture, Prabhupada looks serious. So you can imagine, for Sally and Gopal Agarwal, it was like, the Swami is coming. Who is the Swami? What is he? And he looks serious. Prabhupada arrived at Gopal Agarwal's house at 4 a.m. in the morning. That night, Prabhupada slept on the couch. They were wondering, how are we going to accommodate the Swami? So very nicely, they said, "Swamiji, there's not so much room in the house, but we got a room for you at the YMCA." So Prabhupada was staying at the YMCA, but every day he would come in to Gopal and Sally Agarwal's home, and there he would cook and live with the family, live with the all-American family. Now this was Prabhupada's first exposure to American culture. And Sally Agarwal, if you read her account of how she describes her interactions with Srila Prabhupada, is actually incredible. She says, "Prabhupada was the most brilliant man I've ever met. He was the easiest guest I've ever accommodated. He was so non-demanding. He was so able to just adjust. Sometimes we would smoke cigarettes and Swamiji would say, 'Don't think anything of it.' Sometimes we would keep meat in the fridge and Swami would say, 'Don't worry, it's okay. No problem.' She said, sometimes I was busy doing so many things, but he didn't require or demand everything. He'd just be quietly chanting on his beads, happy." Gopal and Sally Agarwal began to organize programs for Srila Prabhupada. Sally said, "He was amazing. He remembered everyone's name. He captured people's hearts. Everyone could understand he was a saintly person." Sally Agarwal had a daughter, her name was Pamela, and one day she came from school and she looked at Prabhupada and she said, "Swami Jesus!" Said, "Even my daughter could understand how saintly he was." And this picture is so amazing. Gopal and Sally Agarwal had a son, his name was Bridge. And he was about 5 or 6 months old. So Srila Prabhupada was there when Bridge took his first step, when he walked for the first time. And they captured that moment. And you think, like, it's so amazing. Prabhupada is so much rooted in transcendence. He's such a spiritual heavyweight. But at the same time, he's so human. He's so kind. He's so relatable. He's so warm. And for me, this is incredible. When you see how Sally Agarwal glorifies Srila Prabhupada, actually she doesn't say anything about what Prabhupada taught her in terms of philosophy. All she talks about is how amazingly down-to-earth, human, and kind Srila Prabhupada was. When we read about the Goswamis were rooted in an incredible transcendence. Tyaktva, Durnam, Ashesha, Mandala, Pati, they threw off all aristocracy and lived as mendicants. Sankhya, Purava, Kanama, Gana, Natibi, as mendicants, they were engaged in heavyweight sadhana. Many, many rounds, many parikramas. To the extent of what? Nidra, Hara, Vihara, Kadi, Vijito, Jatyanta, Dino, Jayo. They were so deep in their sadhana, so deeply absorbed in spiritual practice, that practically they gave up all eating, all sleeping, and were completely oblivious to all bodily necessities. And what was their consciousness? Gopi, Pavala, Samritab, Dilahari, Kalola, Magna, Muhur. They were completely absorbed in the mood of the gopis. These were the Goswamis. Such incredibly deep personalities. But what would they do? They would go around Govardhan and they would meet the families and they would say, how is your daughter? Did she get married? And how is your father's health? And how is the family doing? When there was a village dispute, then they would call the Goswamis to mediate it. In other words, the Goswamis were so incredibly spiritually deep, but at the same time so humanly sensitive, kind, loving, and down to earth. And if our communities can be filled with devotees like this, who are spiritually connected, spiritually deep, profound in their realization of Krishna consciousness, and at the same time on a human level, so kind, so compassionate, and so relatable, then we can understand we're on a winning formula. So today, that's what I wanted to share with you of the sensitive topic. That if somehow or other, each one of us can just up our game a little bit and just be a little bit more sensitive to consider how people are feeling around us, then immediately we'll see that the quality of the community increases massively. Hare Krishna.